Welcome to the Hunter's Quest podcast. This is your host, Hunter McWaters. And we are driving on the Dalton Highway back to Fairbanks from our DIY walk-in, drive-in caribou adventure. And we had an adventure.
It was an adventure.
Spoiler alert, we do not have any dead caribou in our vehicle. But that's just what happens sometimes. But basically my dream, you know, my first ever trip to Alaska that literally changed my life, that's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing now, was a very similar trip to this. You know, rented a U-Haul, drove out somewhere, East Central Alaska, walked in, didn't kill a bull. But it still changed my life. And so it was cool to experience it this time through your eyes. And so while we didn't fill a tag, it was still pretty, like, action-packed, I guess, or at least a lot of stuff happened. Crazy hunt, so we just wanted to recap it a little bit.
Yeah, it was pretty wild. I think before we even kick off the hunt, though, we should talk about this Dalton Highway.
Yeah.
You definitely...
And also, we're here with Ruger.
Hi. How's it going, folks? I'm just a camera guy.
That's Ruger. Ruger Erickson. He was with us the whole time. He tackled everything we put in front of him and captured everything and did a good job.
By the way, I'm Josh Panzica.
Oh, yeah. This is Cuzzo, Josh Panzica.
We've been hunting a lot together lately.
AKA Granddaddy Bird.
That's it.
Or Grandpa Bird.
Grandpa Bird.
So yeah, talk about, what do you want to say about the Dalton? What? Yeah, look, I'll give a little context and I want to get your input. So probably people already know this, but if you don't, there's one road that goes north out of Fairbanks. Well, it goes to the Taylor Highway, and then the Taylor Highway turns into the Dalton Highway about an hour outside of Fairbanks or something. And it's also referred to as the Hall Road. It's just, it's paved in some spots, it's packed dirt in others, concrete or gravel and others. Can be kind of treacherous, lots of dangerous semi-traffic, guys hauling. But anyway, it goes all the way north to Prudhoe Bay, which is, I believe, is the farthest north in the world you can drive a vehicle. So my dream was to come here in the fall, in September. Every other time I've been to Alaska has been in August. I want to come here in a little bit in the autumn, find a hard-horned, big, majestic bull, which we did find some, and I wanted to see if we could do it all 100% walk-in, DIY, drive-in, no transporter, no guide. It was a tough hunt, man.
Yeah, it was a tough hunt. Back to the Dalton Highway, yeah. Though. I think the general public needs to know that it is a gnarly road. It's a 60-mile-an-hour road. You're usually averaging 55 to 60, and you're getting passed by semis. And let's talk about the potholes. The gravel, it's gravel most of the way.
The gravel's not too bad. The worst parts for me are the paved parts. Yeah. There's like literally foot deep, sometimes as wide as like 5-6 foot wide potholes.
Like swallow car tires, and as Hunter pointed out earlier, there's entire ecosystems living inside of the potholes. But you could literally qualify for Formula One just by dodging them.
Yeah, or like a rally car driver.
Yeah. But it's kind of neat because you like start out of Fairbanks and you're in the timber and you work up into the like Ottoman, how do you say that? Like the aspens.
Yeah.
Changing colors, really beautiful. And then you go all the way up through the Brooks Range, which is just these really jagged, gnarly mountains.
Yep.
And then boom, you pop out into the tundra.
Yeah.
As far as you can see, slog.
Just an ocean of tundra.
Of slog.
Yeah. Slog fest. So it's a pretty cool experience just driving up here. I mean, there were literally like, we saw several groups of Chinese tourists that had come up here, and American look like tourists that just came up here just to like drive the road and like look at it.
Yeah.
In fact, at one point Josh even had a group of Chinese tourists like spectating from the road as he was trying to make a bow stock on some freaking caribou.
Yes, they were. Like, they were
buffalo.
Yeah, they were yelling.
They were yelling buffalo, which I think is actually how you say caribou in their language. Interestingly, But anyway, so logistically, we all flew into Fairbanks. We met up here. And then I used the Turo, however you want to say it, rideshare app, reserved a Toyota 4Runner, which we're in right now. So pardon me for the road noise, but this is just the best time to do this podcast. And we basically had a day where I entrusted Joshua with provisioning for the drive up here, which meant like food for the road, some water, some gas, some fuel canisters for our backcountry cooking systems.
All the little stuff.
That was pretty much it. Some snacks and stuff. And then I flew in that night, and then I got an Airbnb in Fairbanks, and then we woke up early and blasted off.
Yes, we did.
Any notes on that part of the trip or thoughts?
No.
And Ruger, feel free to chime in, dude. If you start talking, I'll just hand you the mic.
Yeah. Yeah, we pretty much just took off. We found out, or I found out on the plane from some moose hunters that one of the bridges out of Fairbanks was going to be under construction and closed. So we
got up super early
to beat the closure.
And yeah, Josh randomly talked to somebody and found out that they were closing the Taylor all day on the day we were supposed to drive out.
Yeah.
It wasn't until like 10 a.m. So
it doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you come up here, like, time is not your friend.
Yeah.
Like, you have to make complete, like, what's the word I'm looking for? You need to use your time
be very, very wisely.
Yeah.
You have to be very efficient with your time.
So one day is a big chunk of time.
Yeah. So we made it past that. And we made it up. It took us 12 hours almost exactly to get from Fairbanks to up through Coldfoot, which is about half, well, no, it's about 80% up the way, honestly, to get more fuel. And then it was exactly 12 hours till we got through Attigan Pass, which is basically right where the Brooks Range Mountains stop. And it becomes flatter tundra. And there's a little bit of hills in between, but it's pretty much dropped straight off from giant mountains to rolling tundra. And then it becomes ultra flat, swampy tundra once you get really close to Prudhoe. So my original plan was to hunt kind of up near the mountains, sort of where we ended the trip, like in the more southern part of the hunting area. But as we got up there, all the reports we were hearing was that the caribou were just way farther north than they normally are.
That is true. And then we ran into the road construction zone, which we could not park in. It was 25 miles.
There was also a 25-mile-long road construction zone where we were not allowed to park our rig to hike in from. So that kind of threw a loop in the plan, although we had decided early on that instead of just committing and hiking straight into my spot that I had e-scouted, we were going to drive the road for at least a half a day and, like, just see where the caribou were.
Which we had a pretty good idea of where we thought that they would be in the beginning.
Yeah.
We found this one spot that just lured us all in, and it just seemed like a distant, like, dream of even reaching that peak. And that's ended up in the end.
So we drove around a little bit. We talked to some folks. We found where we thought was kind of a happy medium between far enough north to where we were getting to some caribou, but not all the way up where it was just like a swamp and just like a road hunt, kind of combat hunt, like tons of hunters just jumping out of their vehicles after caribou kind of deal. And there was caribou in that area. And we decided, after some discussion, to basically bomb into the rifle zone, which people don't know. Okay, here's the big point of this whole thing. You cannot hunt with a rifle within 5 miles of the Dalton Highway, which sounds like, oh, 5 miles, yeah, whatever. In the lower 48 or trail miles or most places, yeah, it's no big deal. And we can go into this a little bit more later, but like, and we will. But 5 miles where we hiked in, especially the first time, I think is more equivalent to like 12 to 15.
At least.
It was the deepest, nasty. I've been to Alaska 4 times. This is the deepest, nastiest, most just consistently horrible tundra I've ever walked through.
It was horrific.
The entire way.
Like, imagine hiking and putting your knees to your chest every time you lift your leg. Yeah.
My hip flexors were just on fire because it's literally like high stepping like for
to,
5 miles.
And like what the audience doesn't know is like the swampy tundra is like 8 to 9 inches of water covered with moss with these basketball sized grass clumps, which you can't step on because you can roll an ankle or break a leg like quite easily.
Yep.
So you're, and they're only like 6 inches apart. So you're weaving in and out of that, just wading a swamp. That is literally the northern part of the tundra.
And the thing that we decided that made it really awful was you have to mentally, carefully place every footstep out there. You can't just like zone out, look at the land around you, like talk, think of other stuff, think of back home. Or, no, you have to literally place every foot with care. What do you think about walking on the tundra, Ruger?
Thoroughly dislike it, quite frankly. It's not like anything I've walked on before, and it's not something that I want to walk on again. I probably will, but it's not going to be something that I enjoy ever. Like, literally felt like you're just walking on jello covered with freaking basketballs. Just, I don't know. Josh described it pretty well. Just absolutely horrid.
Yeah.
I have like another way to describe it to the viewers, and by nobody, I hope nobody takes offense to this, but like,
don't make it offensive.
Every woman that gives birth like swears they're never going to have a kid again right after they give birth, but then like 9 months later they forget the pain and the agony. Yeah. And they're ready to have a kid again.
Yep.
And we are not at that stage. We're like, no way. And every single Alaskan or person we ran into, it was like, you guys went into the rifle range? Like, you guys are insane.
Yeah.
Like, every single
person. It's no easy feat. And we did it twice. In 2 different spots. So, but basically when I planned this hunt, like, I kind of, the plan was, like, to try to kill one with my bow in the bow hunting zone. It was sort of going to be my first, like, archery hunt. That was how I went into this hunt. Because it's just so insane to walk that far back there that literally 9 out of 10 people will never do it. So they just bow hunt it. So that was the plan. But then after the bear hunt, I just kind of randomly, like, threw it out to Josh because he said he wanted to do some outside of Oregon stuff. And he's been so good to me, like, helping me out over the years, like, with different hunts. And we've become good buddies. So, like, yeah, man, you want to just come to Alaska with us? Kind of last minute. And I didn't really honestly believe you'd be able to pull it off, but you did. You pulled it off. And you made it happen. You did. You crushed it, dude. I mean, you definitely, I feel like you learned a lot about, like, backcountry, especially backcountry Alaska is, like, next level from just regular backcountry.
It's next level. Like, the little things are ginormous things, like, in Alaska. Like, you forget one item and you're just miserable.
One tiny little item.
Yeah.
You can just, yeah, tent stakes, a rain fly, like, your rain gear, like, just one little thing can be, like, catastrophic.
Yeah. Or if you, like, underestimate the tundra and don't bring enough food.
Yep.
Yeah, our first hike in, we just planned on going like for a couple days and seeing what was back there, and then we were like,
wish we had brought more food.
Oh my gosh, we should have brought more food. Like,
but
oh,
back to what I was saying earlier, it was like when Josh was able to come on, it became, and then also when we got here, I think it became a realization of, wow, this is going to be tough. Like, we were trying to get 2 bulls, which can happen. But we got to the hunting area, like, for me anyway, it was more of a realization of, all right, if we can get 1 down, we're going to be lucky. So I was like, at that point, it, like, really kind of shifted for me to being, let's get Josh. And I kind of was already in this mindset once you accepted the trip, mm-hmm. to come on the trip, was like, let's get Josh one first. Because I've gotten a caribou. And my mindset was, let's just get Josh the first legal bull we can. And then if I'm able to get something too, that's awesome. But anyway, it shifted to that. So that's one reason why we were more, and I did have my bow still, but that's one reason why we were more apt to like try to hit that 5 mile range, because we figured it gave us the best chance of success. And we just came into it, like, you didn't bring your bow, like we were shooting a rifle. So yeah. Anyway, you want to talk to me about that first pack in we did in the really bad tundra?
Yeah, it was gnarly. It was super gnarly. We got, we only made it about halfway the first day to the rifle range.
We tried to find a big vantage point, which out there is not even easy, because it's like, the word I kept thinking was oceanic. Like, it seems like you're on the ocean. It's just huge, rolling country that all looks kind of the same. Yeah. But we found that one
that spot. One range, yeah.
I don't even want to say it, but where we could get, we thought we had a vantage, and that was kind of our goal to get there. And so what'd you think of like that first couple hundred yards through that thick tundra up that first hill?
Yeah, that part wasn't like, it wasn't too bad. It was once we got on the backside, and then was like, oh gosh, we got to like cross a river. Oh, I got to get down in the skivvies.
Yeah. You had to get down to skivvies to cross. I forgot about that.
And then get to this one hillside. And we got up there and set up camp. And actually, we were in Caribou. So we were on a legit bow stock, like 1,400 yard bow stock.
Yep. And we had that other bull that was kind of behind us that in retrospect, I kind of wish we had gone after. But we were still the mindset of let's try to get in the rifle range, in the rifle zone.
Those caribou can see really well.
Yeah.
From a long ways away. And so, like, breaking the 200-yard barrier with a bow out there is, like, no easy task.
Yeah. So you – that first night was the night you did the stalk on that bull with the bow.
Yeah.
So we're still in the bow zone at this point. So we – I had a couple field tip arrows – and we had Josh do a practice shot at 25. And he was pretty close. So we figured, all right, let's release him with the bow.
That's it.
So there's a legal bull. And I said, Josh, go for it, man. And you guys made a pretty good stock on that.
We did. I thought it was going to happen. Like, it was a really good stock. But like I said, they can see. I mean, as soon as we seen antler tips crashing over that hill, they already had us pegged.
Did you ever think, Ruger, that you guys might actually have a shot on that stock?
I knew that there's like a possibility, but my hopes weren't super high for it, just because it's like, it reminded me a lot of archery antelope hunting, and it's like in that similar country. I do a lot of it out in Eastern Oregon, and just them rolling hills, the spot they were in, it was just such a long rolling hill that it was like, if we were able to see them, it was going to be a ways out. It wasn't like we were able to get right up on them, but I was hoping kind of just from what I've heard with caribou, because I didn't have, this is like my first real experience with them. I was kind of hoping that, I heard that they're really curious. So I was hoping if we just kind of, if they did barely see us instead of spooking, they would just kind of, come over and try and investigate us and see what we are instead of spooking. But
yeah,
that was kind of my hopes going into it.
Which sometimes does happen, but anyway, I was like, wow, they actually are getting kind of close over here. We're hitting a, road work zone here, but. So yeah, then that, so that night we only made it about halfway to the rifle zone. But we were just like, we just need to stop here, cause it's getting later in the day and we didn't want to be camping in the dark and stuff. So,
which by the way, trying to set camp in the tundra, like that nasty tundra, is miserable.
Yeah. Like, it's really hard to find a flat, not wet spot to sleep.
Like when you're hiking it and you find even a dirt patch that's like 4 foot by 4 foot, you like stand on it, claim it and just like praise God you found solid ground.
Literally, if you get one step on solid ground, you're like, oh yeah,
I know.
Your foot sinks down at least 6 to 10 inches in wet moss in between giant cavernous chunks of grass.
Yeah. And we kind of threw and go. And I got to that point, remember, and I didn't have 10 stakes. And I was like so upset with Luke.
So here's a tip for you guys. If you borrow or buy a piece of gear or whatever or even if it's a piece of gear that you had that was good last year and you're about to go to Alaska or some big trip, open that thing out. It's a pain in the butt. I know. I didn't want to do it either, but I did it. Open that thing out. Make sure it's good to go. Ruger did it, and he found out some mouse had chewed holes in his, and so he was able to quickly ask me if I had an extra and brought him an extra shelter. Homeboy over here got a shelter from our buddy, our buddy Luke, and although Luke did put the stakes in there, he couldn't find them, so... Yeah. But I, you know, being the experienced Alaska hunter I am, I always have tons extra. Of extra steaks.
Yeah, good thing.
No, I'm just kidding, but I do bring a lot of extra. I usually bring extra steaks all the time just because that's one of those items you were talking about earlier, like so tiny but can completely mess you up if you don't have it.
Yeah, it would have been bad because we got snowed in that night.
Yeah, and we're using Seek Outside Cimarrons, so like... You need the stakes to get those things out.
Yeah, they're a teepee tent.
So anyway, but we got them lined out with extra stakes, but that's just a tip. Always check your stuff. Even if your buddy that you're borrowing it from swears everything's in there, just check it. And plus, you can get it figured out. And like, you carried that nest around for a couple of days and never set it up.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't ready to go.
Yeah, and just the fact that those... basketball-sized grass clumps.
Well, that nest kept me dry because I didn't, because you were sleeping on a tarp. I had to have that bathtub floor. The Cimarron has a half or a full nest you can put in there, is what we're talking about. And it's got, since it's a floorless teepee shelter, the nest has a, you can set it up inside and it's got a screen, but it's got a waterproof bathtub floor. So if you're sleeping literally in a swampy mud hole like I was, it'll keep you dry. And I wasn't sure how the mosquitoes were going to be. So, but anyway, what happened that morning?
I found it really funny, too, at Coldfoot. They have a sign. Yeah. For all you Westerners out there listening, you know how you have, like, the extreme fire danger signs and the Forest Service, you know, changes it from mild
like to, a temperature to gauge extreme. Kind of thing. Yeah.
They have those gauges up here for mosquitoes.
Skeeter meter.
Skeeter meter. It was at a low. So we were actually very thankful
for
that. Yeah,
we didn't see really any skeeters. But so that's the morning where, okay, that's the night we got set up. And thank God we did. And honestly, thank God the weather window was exactly how it was. Because it would have made it a whole lot more miserable if it was any different. But basically, as soon as we got in bed, it started pouring rain and poured all night. And then it rained and it even snowed until about 12:30 or 1 o'clock the next day.
That's right, yeah.
So we were in our tents pretty much socked in, sleeping in, resting till, you know, 10, 11 o'clock. And then it started to clear a little bit. And then as soon as I saw like a weather window at like 12, I was like, all right, guys, let's get out of here. So we packed up quick and we were heading back deeper.
Yeah, so we got deeper, got to the rifle range.
Which is 5 miles.
Yeah.
We got just under so we could day hunt in.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like, that covering terrain and that, or covering ground in that terrain is just painful. So we made it in and...
had a nice...
What happened that night?
Had a nice dinner. Recuperated.
We just chilled that night?
Yeah, we just chilled. Did some glassing. Saw a lot of caribou off in the distance. And then the next morning...
Having trouble remembering that night for some reason.
We just did a lot of glassing. And then...
Well, the next morning was the sunrise morning, right? Yeah.
Yeah, where you, like, came, like, screaming at Ruger and I, wake up,
guys! Wake up! It's a beautiful sunset and there's caribou. We gotta go. Okay, so here's what happened.
And the hunt was on.
I woke up at... I don't know. It was probably, like, 7. It wasn't super early.
Oh my goodness, it was
6:37.
It was so early.
It just looked early because the way the sunlight is up here. It was probably 7. Anyway.
Old baby bird is sleeping sound.
My eyes pop open. It's completely bright in my tent. I open the thing. And if you ever spent much time in Alaska, you just know how rare a sunny morning is. Like, it'll be sunny sometimes. Like, you might get one or two sunny days on a trip, but usually it's like afternoon or like mid-morning when it's burned off a little bit and it pokes through for a couple hours. This was like, I woke up 7 a.m. Sun was still rising, basically, and it was not a cloud in the sky. I've literally never seen that in Alaska. And the entire tundra was covered with like this blanket of frost. And so it was just like completely beautiful.
It was a cold night.
And, yeah, cold night. I'd never seen anything like it in Alaska. And then I look over next to camp and there's a group of caribou with a legal bull in it, a nice bull, like, I don't know, what, like a mile away.
Yeah.
But in my mind's eye, they seemed a lot closer just because how big that country is. And I was just like, let's go. So I just came out like screaming, wake up, beautiful sunrise. Yeah. There's caribou, let's go. Because these guys were just out.
Yep. And so we put the stock on. There was two groups of caribou. The one with the nice bull kind of crested over the ridge. That's another thing about caribou. They don't stop moving. So we learned that after 10 hard days. Like, you cannot catch them.
No.
The other group we went after, they were so far away, we were having a really hard time identifying sex. I almost was about to shoot. Thank God we didn't, or I didn't.
Yeah, you're glossing over it, man. We got to break that down more. But okay, so we saw the one group. They kind of, like you said, went over to the ridge. Mm-hmm. The second group we saw, we all pretty much thought they were all cows, but there was one in there that was bigger than rest. It had different body language. It had more white on its head and neck. And I was not sure if it was a cow or a bull. Also, like, the way it was interacting with the other calves.
It was mean.
It was mean. It was, like, chasing off the calves from the mothers. It was, like, it was the only one in there that didn't have calves, I believe, or a calf. And so, I don't know, I just felt like it might be a young bull just hanging out with these cows, like, waiting for one of them to go into heat or something. So we did. We stalked in, and we just couldn't confirm, and... And I will admit, I could probably be... I should have gotten more... And this is not the first time I've said this either. But I should have familiarized myself even more about sexing these things. And when they're very small bulls, it is pretty hard. In retrospect, I think Ruger said it wisely. The body on this thing was so big, because I think it really was like a really old, mature, like regressed cow. That like... The antlers, if it was a bull, should have been bigger.
Yeah.
So anyway, we couldn't confirm, and I'll be the first to admit, I thought I saw testicles at one point, and I was very confident. Like, I was like telling Josh, like, dude, it's a bull. And he got on the gun, and he, I think, listened to the Holy Spirit, listened to wisdom, made the right call, and just was not able to confirm himself yes or no, and didn't take the shot, which was like so good and so smart, because we did confirm later, we saw it pee and it was a cow.
Yeah. And the thing is too, like, you're that deep in, you're not going for a trophy bull.
Oh no, we were trying to kill the first legal bull we could find.
At that point, you are so deep, like, you take what God gives you.
Anything would be a trophy out there,
you know. And so, yeah, and then
the lady's sitting on a piece of equipment with a piece of pizza, just chilling.
So we got really close. I mean, we could have killed. They kind of blew off, and then they turned around, and they came back, and they were just meandering right around us. We're eating lunch.
But it was cool. They just seen them that close and stalking into them. We did a really good stalk on them.
Yeah.
If there was a bull, we would have killed it.
Yeah, and then we climbed that death ridge.
Yeah, then we climbed a huge ridge.
Looking for that other herd, which was 10,000 miles away by the time we got up there. But there was that cow and calf up there, which Ruger was asleep, and you and I decided to do the whole act like dorks on the mountain and see if they got curious and came in. And she came running in with her calf.
Yep.
To like point blank range, almost ran Ruger over in his sleep.
This cow and calf ran probably 40 yards from, like, was probably 200, 250 yards from us, and just came to 40, just trying to figure out what we were.
Yeah. So many ptarmigan out there.
A lot of ptarmigan. But, and literally, like I said, I have a little bit of Alaska experience, and if you're listening and you do also, I'm telling you confidently, this was the deepest thickest, worst, nastiest tundra I've ever walked through the entire hike in and out and all around up there.
Yeah, so by this point,
no respite, no hard spots, no gravel, nothing. Just endless miles of the worst tundra you've ever been through.
Yeah, it really was. It was miserable.
And literally, like, my bed, my tent had a huge, like, toilet bowl size, no exaggeration, hole in it that looked like moss when you just looked at it. But the second your foot hit it, you'd go literally ankle deep in a pool of water.
And that's the thing.
And like, we were sleeping in those, too.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. Like, your feet are constantly in water.
Constantly.
And then you're just wet all the time. And then that night, that was our last night in there because of the food situation. And
we came in there a little light on food.
Yeah.
Although then, that was sort of our plan, is like, we're going to stay back there 2 or 3 days. And if we're not seeing anything, we're going to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I'm glad, because like you were saying, I mean, when you come back to camp after a hard day and your camp is just a swamp and you're sleeping in a mud hole, it's just like kind of disheartening.
Like literally my Sikh tarp was in water. And then, with my sleeping bag on top of the tarp, like, you're in water.
Yeah.
And that night was horrible for me because my sleeping pad, literally, I didn't realize, but, like, I kicked the cap off of it, and it was so cold that night. I didn't even want to get out of my bag to even – I just thought it popped. And I literally laid in the water in my sleeping bag with no insulation all night and just was completely frozen solid the whole night and was miserable. Had I just got up and looked, I could have re-blown it back up.
Yeah, you thought. What did you think, Ruger, of the whole, that whole first part of the hunt, that first spot?
I don't know. I think that, like, for the situation that we were provided, it was like we made the right call. Like, we were trying to get into a spot where we could still hunt them effectively, not just in the swamp, but where there was still caribou. I just think, like, I don't know. I just think it was just a bad situation, honestly. Like, we seen caribou in there, so we were like, okay, let's do it. And then we just didn't realize what exactly we were in for. So we packed light on food. I think we probably could have found a little bit better camping spots basically every time if we would have gone to a little bit drier spots or stuff. Like, we never had the perfect camping spot. And then, but I mean, honestly, like, I feel like it was the right call for the situation that we were in at the start of the hunt. Like, I don't think I would have really said, okay, let's do this differently, like, looking at it post-fact, because, like, for what it was, I think that was pretty much the right call. Yeah. So,
and I think, too, like, we all really communicated plans and ideas really well. Like, we executed, like, we threw out multiple scenarios. We all listened to each other.
Yeah.
And, like, from the intel we were getting on whereabouts the caribou were at, like, that one spot with that one landmark was just, and we doubled that.
Yeah.
But we did it. Would I ever go back to that spot again? As of right now, not a chance.
The thing was, like, both of those spots, too, that we got to camp, it wasn't like, oh, let's find a nice camp spot. It was, like, literally, like, let's go till we cannot freaking go anymore and just, like, dump our camp out. Like, you know, it was, like, we were exhausted by the time we got there. Yeah. It was just, like, let's just, like, you were to that point where it's, like, I don't even want to walk 50 or 100 more yards because it's that hard.
Yeah.
Just to, like, get a better spot.
Like, I'm just hiking around just, like, telling myself out loud, like, just 1 foot in front of the other.
Yeah.
Just 1 foot
in front of the other. It's like when you're hiking to your normal hunting spot and you have to go through that one area that's, like, the biggest pain in the butt. Like, you hate going through it, but it's, like, you always know, like, I'll be out of this soon. But it's that the entire way.
Yeah. And there's no walking up the creek bottoms.
There's nothing like that.
Because there's no, like, rocks. It's just swamp.
Swamp.
Like, swamp. And it's even deeper swamp.
Yeah.
Like, you have to literally avoid the draws.
Yeah.
And just run ridges. Like, that is pretty much the only way. And another thing, like, with the tundra is elevation means less than distance.
Yeah.
Like, you'd rather just go straight up a mountain if it cuts off a quarter mile.
Yeah, distance is your main enemy, not elevation. Because the inclines are so gradual where we were. It's just the tundra makes it difficult. So anyway, we decided... I packed a little light on the camera batteries as well on accident, and also the food. But it was also really mainly our plan, honestly, was to get out of there if it was slow. And there was caribou there, but it was slow. We weren't seeing...
groups of like 5 to 9.
Yeah.
4 to 9.
And only a few. I mean, it kind of started to dry up there. If we had, you know, stayed there the whole time, we probably would have seen more.
Yeah, I remember saying, but, like, if we wake up tomorrow morning and there's not a caribou in sight, which, by the way, you can see them 4 miles.
Oh, yeah. So you, like, can see miles around us, four or five miles around
us. Yeah, you can find caribou with the naked eye. So I was remember saying, like, if we don't see any caribou when we wake up, let's pack up and get the heck out of here.
Because we knew it was going to be a freaking grind to get out, because we did the hike in over a two-day period. We were going to try to get out all in one day.
Which we did.
Which we did.
And it was miserable.
So, yeah, the next day, that was our mission. We just got out of there all in one day. You know, took breaks. Just, it took us probably, what, it took us 6 hours.
Yeah.
To go 5 miles.
And we picked a different route, which was through a draw, like the last bit, and it was the absolute gnarliest of the tundra that we walked through the entire hunt.
Yeah,
it was brutal.
How are you feeling after? So Ruger's 20, so he's a little younger than us. How are you feeling after that hike out?
I mean, like, definitely was ready to be on firm ground again for a little bit, that's no doubt, but I mean, it definitely wasn't easy walking. I mean, I was feeling sore. I could still go more if I had to, but definitely kind of pushed me to my limits even. And I'd like to think I'm in pretty good shape, so.
You're in pretty good shape.
Definitely pushed me to the edge, I guess, you know, on kind of my comfortability levels.
Yeah, it'll do it.
I mean, we were literally like high-fiving and fist-bumping when we got to the main road.
Yeah.
Because we were just so pumped that we, like...
Yeah, we made it out in one day.
We made it out, and, like, we're like, wow, we just did that.
Yeah.
So then what was the plan?
Then we were like, you know what? That was cool and all, but we got to find where the caribou are. So, again, we knew we were kind of a little bit on the southern edge of the migration. We just... I personally... speaking for myself, I didn't want to go all the way down by Prudhoe because I knew it's just flat. It's just, if you've ever been to, like, in the southeast, like a salt marsh, it reminds you of that, like, just miles of just flat nothing with big deep spots and little creeks running through, and I just didn't want to hunt that, to be completely honest. I know you got to hunt where the animals are. Also, there's tons of guys down there, just rigs at every pullout, because that's what the caribou were. But in that environment, you aren't able to, I mean, you can, but it's harder to get away from the crowd. Places we went, like, nobody else was back there. And even if the caribou were there, we would still have that area probably to ourselves, just because it's so vast and...
yeah.
So few people walk that far back there and that stuff.
The thing is, around Prudhoe Bay, is it's a lot of, like, people that live in the state of Alaska that can shoot cows or bulls, which we're stuck with just bulls.
And it's kind of a rodeo.
It's a rodeo.
You at one point saw two guys with bows drawn on the road facing each other.
Yeah, these caribou were getting bumped around and they were crossing the highway, and the rigs are like 100 yards apart, and the dudes were facing each other, drawn with their bows at each other. It was ridiculous.
So you got that going on. Again, literally on one of the stalks we put on, Josh, no joke, had a group of like 6 Chinese tourists standing out taking pictures, looking.
You're jumping way ahead though.
Like, I know, I'm just painting a picture of the road situation. Mm-hmm. Like applauding, screaming buffalo. So I didn't want to go down there and hunt that, but that's where the caribou were. So we went down there, and we decided we're going to do some bow stalks. Because we were seeing a lot of caribou out there.
What our plan was to find caribou and find other routes into the rifle range.
But out there, what I'm saying is there's no routes. There's just out.
But at this point, that's what we were doing.
Yeah.
And then, we did some bow stalks. And then we stayed in Prudhoe that night.
Yep. So, we headed up north. We did a few stalks. I ran out. Basically, where we were, you could see about a mile, and then there was like a slight rise, like, you know, 1 foot rise that you couldn't see past over, really. But I did one stalk. We got probably 150 yards from this pretty nice bull. But we just, it's a weird game. You can't, we never really quite figured it out. There are different strategies I've heard people employ, but like, there's just no cover. So like, we were testing out, like, you know, angling towards them, walking straight for them. We tried sneaking, we tried not sneaking. So I don't know. There could have been other, I'm sure there are other things we didn't do, but we did that for a few days. And then, we were already up near Prudhoe, and I figured it was about halftime in the hunt. Some of us had some family stuff going on back home, so we need to like check service and stuff. And I was like, dude, let's get a nice meal here in Prudhoe, because I know a place in Prudhoe Bay where we can eat. We got a nice buffet. The buffet. What'd you think about that meal, Rugi?
Best meal I ever ate. Ate way too much. Legit, like, not exaggerating. Probably the most meal or most food I've ate in a 12-hour period. Like, it was just insane. Like, they had like Korean ribs, some shrimp, some amazing Hawaiian chicken breast, all sorts of rice and stuff, and
snack bar.
Like, yeah, I ended up going back for thirds at the meal, and then ended up snacking like three times throughout the night. Basically,
my son was born that day.
Woke up in the middle of the night, going to the snack room and just eating snacks. Wait, what did you say?
My son was born that day.
Yeah, I didn't know if we wanted to go into that or not. I didn't know what your status was on that.
Yeah, my son came 2 months early. We pretty much caught word that there was emergency C-section.
On the hunt. Like, basically, we were setting up our first camp in the tundra hellhole.
Yeah. She labored. Then they decided to get him out of there. So, yeah, he was born that day.
So
2 months early. Congrats. Stuck it out. Stuck the hunt out.
We told him, like, 50 times, we will leave right now and drive you to Prudhoe Bay to get on a flight.
You know, Hunter was literally in reaching my spouse saying, like, all you got to do is tell me you want him.
I did. I was like, I won't even tell him that you said so. I'll make him leave. And she's like, no. So anyway, me and Ruger were saying, hey, dude, if you need to go back, you can, or we can right now. We'll take you to the airport, whatever. But for, you know, Josh has his own reasons and his own whatever, and decided to stick the hunt out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, selfishly, I'm glad you did. So I hope everything works out there. But hey, thank God it's a beautiful, healthy little boy.
Yeah.
So anyway, where were we? Okay, yeah.
We stay in Prudhoe.
So then we had this huge meal, which this is worth mentioning if you do a hunt like this. There are these oil worker camps up there. Shout out to Brooks Camp. It's my favorite. The rooms are not cheap, but when you get a room there, you also get access to washer and dryer, a snack room where you can get breakfast, usually dinner or and breakfast the next day, meals, snacks. So, and they're clean, good rooms, showers. We had bunk bedrooms. But anyway, after we ate that huge meal, and I pigged out too, I ate so much, it was ridiculous. And then got some donuts on the way out too, which I was going to save, but I scarfed all that night.
He's a midnight snacker.
I mean, I don't eat that much at home, but I'm telling you, dude, we burned some serious calories on this trip.
Yeah, we did.
Anyway, what was I on? I was on Brooks Camp. We ate at the Aurora. That's kind of, in my opinion, the best food place, the Aurora. But I just knew that we needed like a recharge night. So I went over to Brooks just to see what they would cost. And they actually gave us a really good deal on the room.
Ruger needed to do computering. Anyway.
Also, yeah, Ruger needed to dump media. And like when we got out of dinner, we were all full, tired, sleepy. And like it was freezing cold. And I was like, the last thing I want to do right now is go freeze and like go try to find a spot to put up a tent and like sleep in this teepee.
On the side of the highway.
On the side of the highway, like with 18 wheelers just trucking by us. So we decided to take that night and stay at Brooks Camp. Got a little recharge, shower, dried out some, got a good breakfast. Rugi hit the snack bar twice in the middle of the night to replenish his calories. What'd you think about that place? It's a weird place, isn't it?
Yeah, it's kind of like prison. It's not, it's like really industrial. It's not like a town. Like, it's not a town. You think Prudhoe Bay, you're like, oh man, this is going to be an awesome Arctic town.
No.
It's like,
it's a work camp.
It's a work camp, straight pipeline.
It literally is a work camp.
I was in Hog Heaven because I'm a pipeliner. I'm like looking at the meter sets and stuff, just getting so irritated.
Jumped out of the car taking pictures of the meter, the gas meter, like, look how crappy that work is, man. Whoa. Yeah, like sending it back to his buddies
that I work with. Yeah. They're like, what are you doing? I'm like, man, look at that. There's a pipeline marker out here in the middle of nowhere. They're just baffling. But yeah, it's pretty depressing area.
It's a work camp.
But
guys come up there for 2 or 3 weeks at a time.
Is that a huge bull moose out there, dude?
Yes.
No way. Sorry, guys. We are pulling over. There is a gigantic bull moose. Oh my gosh.
Hey guys, I want to talk to you really quick about one of my favorite partners, which is BlackOvis.com. And I've been using Black Ovis since way before I had a TV show or a podcast or any of that stuff. They're kind of your one-stop shop for anything you need as far as solid hunting gear. You know, they got camping stuff. They got crispy boots, seek outside shelters, loophole optics, tons of other great brands. And they also have their own in-house brand, which is pretty good stuff. They got some really good merinos and some puffies that I've worn before, and they're at a great price point. So, you know, the other thing I love about Black Ovis is their custom arrow shop. A lot of people don't know this, but you can send in your exact specifications for your specific type of arrow, your length, your fletchings, your inserts, field tips, all that stuff. And Black Ovis will custom make your arrows and send them straight to your door. It's a really cool deal, guys. So go over there to blackovis.com, check out everything they got over there. And when you do, use the promo code QUEST and you will save and you'll help support the show. So go to blackovis.com, use that code QUEST and get some solid hunting gear.
All right. Sorry, guys. We just saw a giant bull moose while we were driving. So we had to stop and get some footage.
Gigantic legal bull.
Okay, so we just stayed in Prudhoe Bay. It was a good little recharge night. Dumped some footage. Got decent sleep, although I ate too much to sleep good. But we got breakfast and headed out the next day. And we spent the first half of the day kind of just doing bow stalks, like trying our hand at the bow hunting thing.
We made a game of it, bro.
Yeah, we made a game.
We made a game of it. Like, I get one, you get one. I get one, you get one. I get one, you get one. If I shoot one and miss, I hand the bow off to you. Like, it was fun.
It was pretty fun.
We got some really good stalks in.
Yeah, we got some stalks in. We tried that. Like I said, that's when we kind of realized, too, that it was a circus up there a little bit. It was kind of like you drive around, you see a group, and like there's like three or four rigs, three or four dudes out there. You know, everyone kind of jockeying for position. I mean, and you could get lucky and somebody could push some towards you, or maybe you walk a little further than the next guy. And that was one thing that we didn't really try, which in retrospect we might have tried, was just walking like a mile or two out, like enough to get away from everybody, and then just like sitting for a while. The other thing is too, we didn't have a whole lot of time to really be sitting anywhere. Like, we really wanted to kind of, I don't know. That wasn't really the experience we were going for.
It was a lot of fun, though, doing that. But yeah,
it was fun, but, I mean, I feel like you guys were more ready to get up and get out of there and go get a different experience even than I was. I mean, I wasn't. Yep. I was kind of indifferent. Like, I probably would have stayed there. If it were just me, I was having this conversation with you last night. If it were just me hunting, since I had my bow, I would have invested more time into just trying to kill one with the bow where the caribou were. But again, that's not really what this hunt was about, really. I really wanted to get Josh his first caribou on his first trip to Alaska. And the best chances that we had for success for that, I think, still was getting into rifle range. Because you shot my bow one time at 25 yards.
Yeah.
And they were not letting you get inside 100 usually.
Yeah, I got one stock into under 100. Yeah. Remember, that had become my goal that day. It was like, I just got to break the 100-yard mark.
Yeah.
I'll be like, that'd be a success.
Yeah, for sure. And like, a lot of the guys I've talked to that have killed them with a bow up here, especially like decent bulls, they're longer shots. They're 65, 75 yard shots sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, taking somebody else's bow with a different draw length and in the wind and under pressure in a swamp trying to make a 65 yard shot, it's like, I don't know. We decided against it and kind of decided.
What we really discussed is going back south, whether we saw caribou or not, and just getting into the rifle range and having that backcountry experience.
Right, having a true backcountry experience, not just road hunting.
And, like, doing it the hard way. That was kind of the theme of this hunt. It's, like, the hard way. Yeah. Everything was going to be the hardest way. And so, yeah, I think we did one more stalk. We kept seeing little groups of caribou. Yeah. We're like, do you even feel like getting out of the rig and going after them?
Like, all right, we're going. All right, we're going south. Then we see some caribou. All right, one more. Let's jump out and try.
Yeah.
We did that a couple times. And finally, we did. And we left bulls. We did randomly forget to mention that, like, on our way north, we saw two giants across the river and got some footage of them, but they just were out of reach across the river. But
just couldn't cross that river.
We could have made a day of it and tried to get across there, but, I mean, they were gone anyways. So, just two random bulls moving through. Anyway, that's off the topic. So, we decided we're going to go have the true backcountry experience, not just hunt on the road here. And so, basically, I had e-scouted based on talking to my transporter from last year and just doing some e-scouting. I found a couple spots a little closer up in the mountains where there could possibly be some. There's this like geological feature that I'd heard of before, but never actually known where they were. Some of the ridge lines have, I think we heard it was like decomposing granite that's just like kind of poking out of the surface around. And like when you get off of the slopes, it's more swampy. But if you can kind of follow these, I was calling them rock seams.
If you can find them.
If you can find them and you can follow them, you can have much easier hiking than the swampy, like, lumpy tundra stuff.
And as Old Hook said, oh, there's always caribou back there.
And as a friend of mine said, that this area traditionally holds caribou no matter what the migration is doing. So we decided to go in a Hail Mary. It was we knew we were going away. We were leaving animals. We were going away from the main herd. We knew it. I even said, like, we're leaving caribou to try to find caribou. But it was kind of like it was one of those shots where it's like one of those swings where it's like you're either going to strike out or you're going to hit a freaking home run.
Yeah.
There's no base hit.
No base hit. And we were like all or nothing. That's what we're going to do. That's the right thing to do.
What'd you think about the call, Rook?
Honestly, I think it was the right decision. I'm not super big for road hunting and combat hunting. So, like, for the situation provided, basically having two options, I thought that was the correct route. I really liked the idea of going back up in. A lot prettier scenery, a lot easier walking, a lot better camping. Thought of ptarmigan, which we may or may not have gotten one. Delicious. And, yeah, honestly, just, like, a really cool way to just kind of end our trip and just really enjoy God's creation up there, in the sense of, like, yeah, there might not have been a whole lot of caribou, but even if there isn't a single caribou up there, we're going to have a great time, look at some beautiful country, and just appreciate what we have and what we were gifted with. So I thought it was really the right call.
Yeah, for sure. Well said. It was the right call, for sure. I mean, I remember pulling up on the spot where we were going to park, looking at the abyss, like, we got to get to that mountain, and I just remember being so dejected. And the reason why is because it was literally a 5 mile hike back uphill.
Yeah.
And like, it's like, oh no.
He was already dreading the hike out before we started the hike in.
My oh no's were already coming out. But we got there late in the afternoon.
We got there what, like, it was like 2 or 3 or?
And boy, I'll tell you, I was determined. We were getting to the rifle range and setting camp before dark.
Yeah, you did kind of, yeah.
I picked it up, man.
You picked it up.
Picked it up, and we made it. We made it to the rifle range, and lo and behold, we found a little rocky, gravelly, perfectly flat, beautiful spot right over a lake to camp at. A
little ridge top right over a lake, overlooking a lake. Yeah.
With weasels.
It was beautiful. It was a little predator's perch. We saw owls and hawks. We saw a fox on the walk-in. There was weasels on our spot. It was a more like, there was much more caribou sign. There was sheds literally everywhere.
We couldn't even get.
We couldn't even keep all the sheds. I mean,
yeah, we had to just have, we left a pile of shed on our camp spot.
So yeah, gorgeous camping. But yeah, we did. We hiked all the way in 5 miles. It was like mostly downhill and on these rock seams that we were able to find. So it was like, we made it, I think we made it into like just that 5 miles in like 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Like we booked in there and set up camp, a really nice camp spot. It was a beautiful night. We had like very rare Alaskan weather. I was trying to describe to the boys like how rare it was. We had like 3 or 4 like just sunny, like 60 degree days in a row.
Yeah.
It was so weird, man. We had that one day of like Alaska weather, snowy and rainy and like cloudy and cold. And the rest was, which honestly, like it probably was one of the reasons why there was no caribou there, but it did make living out there a little more enjoyable.
It was enjoyable. I mean, we were really just having a good time, joking, laughing, glassing. Yeah.
And then the next, I stayed up pretty late. Just, I always find it hard to crawl in the, man, look at this over here. I always find it really difficult to crawl into the tent when it's still light and just beautiful. So I stayed up late pretty much every night and woke up early pretty much every morning. But the next morning we decided
we
were going to day hunt, and we went another 2 miles. I went 2.5 miles to literally the furthest knob you can get to look at the base of this mountain at this spot that's supposed to be the kind of a pinch point for caribou.
And we hunted.
And I saw 2 out there.
Yep, he did. In the famous words of Hook,
there's always caribou. Always
caribou. But they were in
there's always caribou.
They were late in the day.
There's always caribou in there.
That's it.
I took my wife back there. We shot one back there. There's always caribou.
That's it.
Hook, if you're listening, I love you. That's you, though.
Yeah, we did see some. Basically stayed out there all day. Literally all day. I mean, at any point, something could pop out.
And we followed almost the exact line. Shout out to Onyx right here, because first of all, Onyx, we couldn't have known where we were off the road into the rifle and the bow zone without it. But also, I had e-scouted a lot on Onyx prior to the trip and had actually drawn a line, basically the exact route that we followed out there to our campsite.
Yeah, Onyx so, really did us well up here.
Yeah, it's pretty cool that you can never having been to a place, get on there and map out a route, and it turns out that like that's the actual exact, and not because I was like, hey, let's walk this route. It was like, let's find the best route, and it was on my line that I'd e-scouted. So anyway, shout out to Onyx. If you're not a member, you should sign up, and you should use the code Quest while you're at it.
There you go.
But yeah, seriously. Okay, so then
I do want to give a shout out to Canis too. Your pants worked extremely well.
Yeah, the Canis stuff did great. Yeah,
I mean, the water beads off. My legs were pretty much dry. My feet were soaked the whole time.
They have these reinforced knees. You can put knee pads in them if you want, but both of us run them with no knee pads. But even without the knee pads, they have these reinforced waterproof knees. You literally kneel down in the tundra and they wouldn't get wet at all.
Yeah. I'm very, very impressed
I was with the Canis gear. Yeah, and also one couple times I stepped in water over my gaiters and like had to like run and it would splash up on my pants and just like beaded right off. Also, I noticed they didn't stretch out like a lot of pants. Like after like 3 days in the backcountry, they'll be like 3 sizes bigger.
Yeah.
And these haven't stretched.
I'm still wearing mine.
Yeah.
2 weeks later. 20 days
later. You've been wearing it the whole time. Yeah, pretty much. Same pair of pants. I've been switching back and forth between two, but we're wearing the Alpine pants. There's the Alpine lights and then Alpine. I think the Alpine is the best choice. They're my favorite. So anyway, yeah, I was really impressed with the Canis stuff. The puffies kept me really warm. This is my first time running the Canis puffies when I actually like real backcountry hunt, and they did really well. I had a whole layering system, which I can go through later, but basically I have a merino top, then a merino long sleeve hoodie, which I always wear, even if it's like warm, for sun protection too. And also in Alaska, like it can be 60 and then a cloud rolls over the sun and you stop for 5 minutes and you're freezing cold.
Yeah.
So I don't ever really do a short sleeve. I'll do a short sleeve, long sleeve, hooded merino. Then I was running a, when it was really cold, the Chamois Grid Fleece hoodie and the Alpha Grizzly insulation layer. And then like at night, I was putting on the down hoodie, whatever it is, puffy on top of that. Anyway, shout out to Canis. Okay, so where are we?
Yeah, so that night...
we made it to our furthest point.
Yeah, we pretty much hunted that sun up to sundown, literally as deep as we could go. By now, we're running shy on time. So basically, it's like, all right, we have the hike out of here. We have the 12-hour drive. Let's just chill.
And a five-mile uphill hike out of here.
Let's eat some ptarmigan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That. Let's just glass. And if we see one in the immediate area in the morning, we'll shoot it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a really fun night. You and I sat up really late just admiring the tundra till we were so fogged in we couldn't see but like 30 yards.
Yeah. Rigger, tell us the ptarmigan story.
Well, while we were on our hike out there to... what did we end up naming it? Camp Panzica was the name of it,
that's
or something?
That's it.
Forward Operating Base Camp Panzica.
That's it.
Yeah, FOB Panzica. On our hike out there, we were all trudging along. Then out of nowhere, Hunter goes, "Right, stop, stop, stop. Ptarmigan."
What?
Got everyone's curiosity peaked. And we're like, there's ptarmigan. And they were just hanging out, like a couple of them just, I mean, like 30 yards away.
Yeah, 30.
And so... I was like, well, we might as well get some fresh meat, you know. We ain't going to Alaska to get skunked. So Hunter went ahead and pulled the bow off the pack. He gave a little bit of a stalk into him, honestly. Yeah. A little, like, 10-yard stalk. And I was filming it, and I was looking through the camera. And out of nowhere, I hear a twing, and I look up, and one of them just flopping like crazy. So needless to say, he pretty well smoked one. Were those the tourists that were yelling at your stalk?
Yes, they were.
Group. They had, like, a seal on their cars.
Anyway, sorry. We just passed some tourists that looked just like the ones that were yelling at Panzica stalking caribou.
I'll never forget that. I'm, like, a half a mile into the tundra, and I can hear them yelling.
Yeah.
Like, in the middle of a bow stalk, literally.
But, yeah, so Hunter ended up smoking a ptarmigan. We tried to shoot another one, but unfortunately... he just shot a little bit off, so it is what it is. But we ended up cooking it up the next day. We did it for dinner, right?
Yeah.
So what we did? Yeah, we kind of just chopped it up into little pieces, boiled it in some water, and then seasoned it with some salt, garlic, onion, and pepper mix, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and so. Panzica and Hunter both put it in your ramen, and then I put it into my Mountain House, and it was honestly freaking terrific. Yeah, I think it legit boosted the camp spirits just to have some fresh meat on the menu, so that was absolutely amazing. Just like whenever you elk hunt and shoot a grouse, except for just the tundra version of it.
How'd it compare to a grouse?
Yeah, I'd say honestly compared to a grouse, it was I'd say it was a little bit heartier. Honestly, like it felt more like a steak than a grouse.
It's almost like red meat.
Yeah, so it was really good. Reminded me a lot of like chucker almost, honestly, but like a darker chucker. So
it was delicious.
But yeah, so it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I will say every time I've been to Alaska, either me or one of my buddies has gotten at least one ptarmigan. I've never had like a full-on meal of like two or three, which would be amazing, but I still stand by the fact that I think ptarmigan is one of the best tasting wild game meats on the planet. Like, seriously, it's so good. Like, cut it into little chunks and it's just tender and just, yeah. So we cooked that up, enjoyed our night, sat up super late. That night the fog rolled in, you couldn't see anything, but we sat up late anyway. We just
on a more spiritual level, just you and I just kind of sat there and just like just admired God's creation. And for me, you know, coming to Alaska has always been like a for real dream. And it's like,
I've always dreamt it, you know, wanted to be here, and now I'm here. And this is my last night on the tundra until the next time.
Yep.
You know, so it's just like really nice to just sit there and soak it in, you know. And at this point, we basically knew that we weren't killing. You know, there's that what if chance.
There's always that.
You could wake up in the morning, but like, it was a total success in our eyes, and, you know, and it was super fun, and it was just a really good experience. I mean, very trying, very difficult.
You have kind of a come to God moment on the tundra out there at one point.
Yeah, I did. And, you know, this place will change your life, you know. Like I've said many times on this trip, it's obvious that people either A, come here for spiritual reasons, B, to become a better person, or C, to have the hardest challenge in their life. Mm-hmm. Like, and we knew from day one that it was going to be
a challenge.
We were doing it the hard way, no matter what. We weren't going to cop out. So it was just like sitting on that ridge that night, just reminiscing about the whole trip. It was pretty spectacular, to say the least.
Yep.
Then we went to bed, woke up.
Yeah, this was a different one for me. I mean, this is the first time I've ever done one of these hunts where really the focus of the hunt is like get somebody else on an animal. And it was cool. And I think,
which thank you for that, by the way.
Yeah, man. And I genuinely was trying really hard to get just us as a group an animal, you know?
Yeah.
It was a tough hunt, man.
By that point in the hunt, it didn't even matter anymore. Like, we were all just like...
Yeah, the experience is the reward.
It was a win.
For sure, it was a win. You can't fill a tag every hunt, but I had this thought, too, like, not when we were leaving. It's like, you don't want to leave, and it's bittersweet. You want to get home, but you don't.
It's pretty bad when you're dying on the hike out, and you're, like, getting emotional over the fact that you're leaving this place.
Yeah. But just, that's what it did to me, man. After my first trip, it just changed my life. I was like, this is what I want to do. And that's when I started the podcast and the show and everything, man.
So back to the hunt, though. Last morning.
Yeah.
Ruger and I are not even picking up the binoculars. We're not even looking. We have no desire to look because we know it could go south. We could see something out there. And it could be like, we're missing flights, like the whole nine. What does Hunter do? Picks up the binoculars, finds a bull.
Yep,
like
I did.
3.5 miles out.
I picked up the old binos and I found.
Just straight into kill mode, dude. Grabs the rifle, pack, goes to the next glassy knob. Ruger and I are glassing. We're just like, man, the only way we are even going to go after that is if it feeds right up into this basin while we were packing camp.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a cape to a bull, but just out of reach. That's another thing about Alaska. Like, your depth perception is crazy up here, and you have to realize what's obtainable and what's not obtainable.
Yeah. There are animals you can see that you just can't go after.
You just can't get to them. You just can't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw that bull, and...
If that bull had been there 24 hours earlier...
He walked right by where we were glassing the night before.
He
24 hours earlier, we would have been coming out of here with a bull. Probably.
12.
Yeah, 12. So, but yeah, I saw him, and, you know, where he was covering country, and so there was a miraculous chance he could work into our little basin, and so I grabbed the rifle, and I went across the lake from our camp to the first, like, big kind of rise, where I thought I might be able to see him squirt out of the drainage he was in. And I sat there for 30 solid minutes. It's pretty cool. I sat there 30 minutes just waiting. I was kind of praying, Lord, just send him into our basin. So I knew it would be a miracle if he came right to me, but just sat there and waited.
It's just wild. He literally fed right below where we were glassing the evening before.
Yeah. So I waited on him for 30 minutes, and I said, you know, that's it. We got to get out of here, and hiked back to camp and then finished packing up.
We admired it. And old grandpa bird struggled his way out of there.
It took us about, what was it, 4 hours on the way out. So a little more than an hour different.
At this point, we're like 45 miles of tundra hiking total.
We'll call it 50.
Probably about 50.
Say honestly. About 50 miles in the tundra we did and in total.
Everybody's feet are blistering, getting sore.
We're all tired. We're beat up.
It was a struggle. Old Roogie Bear's just going ahead, sitting down, watching us, asking if I'm good, if I'm dying. The whole way out.
What are your thoughts on the experience as a whole, Ruger?
I thought it was, like, definitely... I guess I would describe it as, like, a spiritually humbling experience. It really puts you into perspective of, like, how big you are on this earth, but it also makes you, like, appreciate God's work and, like, what he put on this planet for us to enjoy. I came into this hunt in a pretty poor mental headspace, so I didn't really talk about it much, but I'm sure that the guys kind of picked up on that my vibes were not high, but coming out of it, it's, like, definitely kind of made me, like, appreciate things in a different light and definitely have another, like, level of spirituality to me, connection with God, it feels like. Like, it definitely helped. Like, it was one of the hardest hunts I've ever done, but coming out of it, I feel better than I did coming into it by far, because, like, everything, a lot of aspects of my life going into this hunt, like, stuff, like, went to poop right before the hunt, so I came in, like, really poorly. But now, coming out of it, I definitely feel like a coming out better, stronger, and really, really sore, too, though. It's definitely a physically demanding hunt, but, like, I thought it was a very special spiritual experience, so, for sure.
Dang, man, you didn't share that with us before, yeah. But anyway. Sounds like, even though we didn't fill a tag, it sounds like both you guys had a really good experience and probably grew in your walk with God a little bit, or at least are coming out of this. That's what I mean. It sounds weird, maybe, if you're not used to doing stuff like this, but that's really why I started this whole show and this whole project, is just because doing this kind of stuff really does make you a better person, and it, like, makes you appreciate your everyday life more. And it's like, it's not just going hunting. I mean, that is part of it, but, like, it's more when you do a crazy adventure like this. It's life-changing. It can be.
Well, it's because it's not smarter. It's harder. It's a 10 out of a 10 difficulty level on to get into the rifle range and to do it multiple times. I mean, I just can't stress that enough.
We did Alaska about as hard as anybody does it. I mean, obviously, there's probably some crazy dudes out there that go harder than we do. I'm sure there are, but, like, we went hard, dude. We went real hard. We gave it our all to the end, and I have no regrets coming out of it. Again, it was a different hunt for me. Like, it's kind of cool, like, going from really feeling like, oh, I gotta kill, and then doing a hunt where it's more about, like, the experience and, like, trying to help you get your first bull. Feels like I'm definitely growing as a hunter a little bit, and I still have the dream of getting, like, a really nice big hard horn bull, so maybe next year.
Which, if there'd have been a giant bull at any point in this game, you would have been the one to go after it.
No, you would have.
I just wanted a legal bull, dude.
Yeah, but we still would have let you shoot if it was a big one.
We'd have an argument on the hill.
Nah, I would have let you take the first one.
It'd have been a real quick argument, and then I'd be like, okay.
No, I would have let you take him probably, but that would have been crazy if we just... Anyway, we saw some really cool bulls. Again, that was my dream, to get up here in the fall, see some really cool hardhorn bulls. I am heading back. I do already have plans to be back up here next year in a different part of Alaska, flying in this time. I was hoping to get one in a boat, one in a car, and one in a plane, but... The one in the car is going to have to wait, I guess. But hopefully next year I'll get me a nice bull. But I'll say it again. I said it earlier off camera, but I'm definitely glad to have done this trip with you guys. It was originally just going to be me and Ruger, but I'm super stoked you could join, man. And, like, I wouldn't have rather had anybody else there. You kept the spirits, you know, lively and always there to crack a joke when, you know, when things got low or whatever. Never complained about anything, like, all of us, you know, stayed pretty positive, and it was a good trip. And I'm glad that, for me, it's just as much of a trophy that you guys had that experience, that spiritual, you know, connection with God and the land. So that's just as much as rewarding as anything for me. I just didn't want to come out of this hunt with you like regretting that you came or having a terrible time.
Yeah, know? No regrets. I mean, I'm a hunter. Been hunting my entire life. I know.
Yep.
That you're not always going to kill, and I know that you got to just soak in each moment. You only have so many hunting seasons in you, and you know, 10 years from now, I might be all crippled up and might not even be able to come up here.
Who knows?
You just don't know.
Never know.
So,
no, life is short. Life is short. You got to do these adventures while you can, make them happen, you know, and like you said, you never know what could happen the next day. So, you got to seize the day.
That's it. You know, and another thing I think, like doing these adventures, you got to have a good support system, like family that supports you, spouses that support you. Like, that's another thing that's mentally trying is you're up here. You detach from the world, away from the cell phone and the daily grind, and you have no idea what's going on politically or anything like that. And
so which I like, actually. I was so reluctant to turn my phone on every time I came to service. It took guys were, like, instantly on there. I was just like, no, I'm good.
It took me a little bit to break the phone cycle, for sure. But once you do, it is nice. But you just have to, like, detach from all of that, but also just be so thankful that there are people that support you.
Yeah.
To do this kind of stuff.
Which I got to give a shout out to my wife here. She's awesome. She's been so cool the whole time I've been gone. Supportive texts and also just supporting me and my mother-in-law and my parents too. On just being able to live this life. So shout out to the family. Love you, babe. Ready to get home to everybody. But had a great trip.
It's been a great trip.
We got about, I don't know, what, 5 more hours or something?
Yeah, 5.5, 6.
Back to Fairbanks, and then we're going to be doing busy work to get ready to get out of here.
We're going for a steak dinner, dude.
Yeah, we're going for dinner. You've been talking about that steak dinner for a while.
Yes, that's because Ruger got me set on it about 10 days ago.
T-bone. He wants that tri-tip. All right, well, any other final thoughts, gents?
I just think, like, for everyone out there, like, for me, this was an eye-opener. You think that Alaska is so expensive and unobtainable, and there are DIY hunts that you can do without a guide here.
Yep.
It just takes a little bit of research and good friends like Hunter to like push you in the direction to just do it. And I recommend like highly looking into it, because it's no different than, you know, you drawing a tag across your state and spending the money on fuel and time and everything to go hunt in your own state. It's just as doable to do this hunt,
yeah,
you know, in Alaska. And I just recommend, like, if anyone out there is inspired, to just reach out to any of us on tips,
yeah,
or advice, you know, on Instagram or whatever else, and go for it.
Yeah,
do it, because it is a world-class experience.
And that says something too about like mentorship, even though like you're a great hunter and you've taken me out on 2 hunts now. So, but I have, you know, more Alaska experience and I've done this type of hunting before. So, and in my first trip, I came with a friend, shout out to Ned, who helped me a ton, like a ton, and kind of opened my eyes to Alaska and that it was doable, you know?
Yeah.
And so because of that, that empowered me to do this stuff. And I was able to kind of do that for you on this trip, to kind of open your eyes to it, show you it. So now, like, you could definitely come back and, like, do this hunt again, or even a better one. You know what I mean? So, like, also on the flip side of what you just said, if you're a guy with some experience, you know, invite your buddy who's never hunted out of his home state to come with you next time or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, open somebody else's eyes to it
too. Yeah, it's fairly obtainable, and everyone up here is super friendly. I mean, everyone wants to know where the booze are at, or where the moose are at, or have you seen anything.
And, you know, even when we were around all those other hunters, nobody was like mad or like getting pissy or anything. It was pretty good understanding that they're just crazy animals who are gonna run around all over the place. As long as you don't get right on top of somebody, like, no one really cared if you were out there with them.
No.
Any closing thoughts, Ruge?
Not really, honestly. I feel like you guys covered the hunt really well. It was really, like we said, special experience. Definitely something that's attainable by the average man. That's why they call it the working man's caribou hunt. I mean, it's definitely something that I'm, don't know if it's going to be next year, don't know if the year after, but I'm going to come back here and do this someday, hopefully bring my dad and some of my buddies up here to do it type thing, you know, just something that the average person can enjoy and say, hey, I went to Alaska and I did it. I did that cool thing. You know, just make some of that dad lore, something you can tell your kids someday. So,
yeah, you can be the grandpa bird with the stories. Yeah, not the boring grandpa bird.
For everybody out there, I deemed Ruger the baby bird. So that's what his name has been for
the baby bird
for quite some time. Oh, and I talk in a weird voice like this, and I reference the baby bird.
You talk about the baby bird.
The mystic baby
really
bird.
Really predatory sounding.
Yeah.
Chirp, chirp, chirp.
Squawk, squawk, squawk. Oh, you can't.
We had many laughs out here.
Many laughs. Many laughs.
All right. Well, I guess we'll sign off, guys. Thanks for listening. Thank you to all my partners, Canis, Everly Stock, Weatherby, Loophold, MDT, Barnes Bullets, Black Ovis, Onyx Hunt, Mountain Ops. Support those companies, guys. Try using the code QUEST if you make any purchases. You know, a lot of stuff you can buy on Amazon, you can find on Black Ovis. You'll be supporting a hunting company, not just like Jeff Bezos. So order stuff on there. Use my code QUEST, save a little bit. And if you don't mind, guys, if you're still listening at this point, please go to YouTube and just subscribe. If you're not a subscriber, I'd really appreciate it. It's free and helps me out. Also on Instagram, @TheHuntersQuest, follow that. Thanks for your support. We'll see you guys in the next one.